Joe, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. It's early, but I'm happy. Flew a little space, good. Star Citizen this morning to wake myself up. I'm happy. Doing
good. Well, you wanted to wake yourself up for the Comics Brush podcast.
Exactly.
Oh, cool. Where are you located?
I'm up in Seattle area, the suburbs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yep, living it up, making games in the suburbs like
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
You know? But I know that Seattle is kind of a game city, right? Like, there's a lot of tech there.
Yeah, Microsoft's up here. That's what brought me up. Yeah. And then when there's a big tech like that, there's, you know, everything starts sprouting. Obviously, Valve's up here and mm-hmm. Bungie's up here.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that. Sucker Punch as well, yeah.
Oh, wow. Cool. Okay, so this is going to be a really fun podcast. I've been looking forward to this for weeks, I think. The reason I'm most excited about this conversation is because you went full-time indie,
yeah.
And we can cut this if you want, but you went full-time indie, and then it didn't kind of work out, right? And so you went back and got a job, and now you're sort of going for round two?
Yeah, totally. So it worked out enough. I could have gone for the stretch and made it to part two, but it felt tight, and it's never so easy to just keep rolling, you know? So I slowed down, and then that kind of made it harder and tighter. And so I decided to get a real job again, and quote unquote, a real job. And slow down the process. And it's been tough. It's been hard for me actually to like keep motivation for song two. I've weaved in and out of it, but.
Well, let's talk about song two.
Yeah.
First, let's give you the shout out you deserve. There's two links below for anyone listening. The game is called Song of Iron, and then you're working on Song of Iron 2, correct? Do you want to give us sort of a breakdown of like who you are and what you're making, and just give us a rundown of all your current career with games?
Yeah, I can. I'm an animator by trade. I've been doing it for 17 plus years now at this point. I started at Cryptic Studios. I was there for like 9 years. Well, I worked at a really small cabinet studio in Chicago, Play Mechanics, where they made Big Buck Hunter. So I worked on like Big Buck Hunter HD was my first game ever.
No way.
Which was, it was insane. I mean, it was like full cut your teeth on, you know, no one knows how to make anything, and you just go to scrap it with their way through it. But obviously, I mean, it was a great starting experience. But I was there for like 8 months or something, and then I got the job at Cryptic, which brought me out to do MMOs for like 8 years, which was awesome because it taught me how to be super fast. Because you know, MMO players just eat content for breakfast, and so you can never keep up with them. And so we did our best to do it. From there, I went to 343. And worked on Halo 5 and Halo Infinite forever, it felt like.
And what did you do specifically for those games?
The most notable stuff for 5 was I did a really big portion of the Warden work animation. He was the big bad for 5.
No way, dude. That's so cool.
Yeah, I did a ton of that. That guy was nuts. It was actually really fun to work on. And then I did a ton of assassinations for 5, a bunch of them for the MP team. And then for Infinite, I was the lead character animator. So I led anything that wasn't Master Chief that was a character in the game. I was the lead animator for that stuff, not including cinematics. That's a whole different department. But then Brutes were kind of like my character of Infinite. Specifically, the Chieftains was sort of what I was able to carve out for myself while doing all the other Microsoft I'm a lead, so now I have to go to meetings all day stuff. that was
so
really fun.
Currently, are you doing that currently? Sorry to interrupt you. Are you doing
no,
that currently?
I left Microsoft for Song, and I was gone for about 2 years. And then I joined some friends from that team that started their own studio, and that didn't work out either. So I've actually moved on to a second new studio called Gravity Well, which. They are pretty. They haven't really talked about what they're doing yet, but I'm having a blast. So I'm super happy to be on the team.
Sweet. Is it AAA?
Yeah, I think they're considering AAA. It's a small team and trying to keep it that way. It's a bunch of ex-respawn people.
Yep.
And having a blast with them.
That's so cool. What a wild career. It's very different than, I think, you know, it's very different than what a lot of indies like think about. Like, you basically got one foot in the AAA world and one foot in the indie world. Yeah. And I've never met a game developer who's doing that. Could you kind of give me like a pros and cons list?
Between the two of them?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man, it's tough. You know, I think the pros for AAA, in theory, is that it's chill and you don't have to think too much and you just do your job. And the bigger the studio, the more narrow your role becomes, just by the nature of the amount of people they have. And, you know, so like for Halo 5, for example, I was just honed in on a couple characters and I just worked on them. And they kind of became my characters because I was the personality behind them as the animator. And I didn't have to worry much about anything else, even other characters in the game and stuff. I just really focused. So it's nice. There's a chillness to that. But at the same time, I'm design headed, and so I'm always asking questions, and I without even meaning to, I end up just like sticking my nose in it where it doesn't belong sometimes, and try to help and try to ask questions, and I can't help but try to make the whole experience better based on, you know, my experiences and my opinion and stuff, and that can be tough at a big studio because there's a whole department dedicated to that, so they don't need an animator sticking their head in trying to help or give opinion sometimes. And so from the indie side, you know, you have the freedom of doing whatever you want and following your kind of your heart on stuff, but of course that means that you have to deliver on that stuff. So there's a massive amount of learning to be done on the indie side, and you will forever run into things that you didn't think about and you don't know anything about, but you have to do to just get it out the door, let alone to be successful. And I think that's fun because I love to learn, and the older I get, the more I get out of learning new stuff. But once in a while, you'll hit a wall and you just want to throw your computer out the window. And at a big studio, someone else would deal with that problem for you.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I mean, okay, yeah, we can go on and on for it, but...
Well, I kind of want to know because, you know, AAA kind of gets a bad rap in term, and it sometimes it should.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Just because the grind is real. I mean,
yeah.
Or is it? Is it real? Like, I remember watching the old Bungie documentaries from, like, Halo 2 and stuff, and they would work till, like, 3 a.m., you know?
Mm-hmm.
Did it feel that way? AAA?
Yeah, I've had moments in my career where I had a crunch like that. I feel lucky based on stories that I never had it really that bad. And it sounds like a thing that happens to us. You know, you do kind of volunteer for it. It's heavily encouraged, but I've definitely never been somewhere where they're like, if you're not here, we're just going to let you go. It's like they're crunching because they need people. They're not going to start firing people.
Would
be counterintuitive, but... whenever I've been part of any sort of crunch, the team's always been really good, and it's been a big point to, like, let's do Tuesday as our stay late day. We'll do it all together. We'll go out for dinner before we go to the next 3 or 4 hours, you know, and try to, like, do it together. And that helps, and, you know, we goof around.
Well, if you had to pick one, what... Exactly. I mean, that's really good to hear. Yeah. It sounds like it's a lot of fun. Like,
it can just sort of be. Yeah, it can
hanging out
be.
With friends and making games and eating pizza and going out to dinner and then going back.
Sometimes it does feel like that. And I, you know, it helped I was younger and I, you know, responsibilities are lower and, you know, you're happy to just be with your friends.
Yeah.
And animation teams are usually pretty fun. We kind of goof off together in my experience. So it is just like... It's like your friends, sort of, so.
How does the stress compare to indie game development? So you've released, you know, Song of Fire, you released that in, or I'm sorry, not Song of Fire, Song of Iron, which I'm pretty sure you're hearkening to sort of Game of Thrones vibes there, correct?
Yeah, a little bit. That was one of those, like, I need a name, and then I just started, like, putting words on a sheet, and it was like, oh, this sounds kind of cool. And then all of a sudden,
Yeah. So you released that game, right? And you went full time.
Yeah.
And or you worked on the game full time and then you released it. So you know about the stress of building this house of cards completely alone.
Yeah, yeah. 1,000 times more stressful than AAA. you know.
Really?
Yeah, I mean,
because I think a lot of people who are listening to this podcast, they're thinking AAA is way more stressful. I'd rather have the responsibility on my own and work from home in my pajamas and, you know, vape all day while I work.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe your day to day, if you average it out, it's not so bad. But with the solo stuff, you are completely beholden to yourself and to your own success. AAA, you know, you can have a bad day, you can take a day off. You definitely don't feel bad about doing that. And in the end, the success of the game often doesn't financially matter to you in AAA. Sometimes there's some bonus features or some incentives, you know, profit sharing. But that stuff's so flimsy, I think. And really, it's your paycheck. And so even if you love the game and you want it to be amazing, you want everyone to love it, like, say you're completely drinking the Kool-Aid of the studio you're at a AAA place, even then you're not going to, if it does bad, it's just a little like, oh, that stinks. But you can probably find like, oh, well, they liked my thing, you know, this cool animation I did, or this assassination often are liked. So we kind of always have this like defense from stress, I guess, in a AAA. But you read one bad review about your own project, and it cuts straight into your heart, and it's insane. So they just do not compare.
What is the primary driver of stress when you were working on Song of Iron or Song of Iron 2? You're working on that now. What's the primary driver of stress? I like to ask this question a lot because sometimes it's fear. Like, it's not going to make... It's a monetary fear. The game's not going to make any money. Yeah. Sometimes it's a fear of the public not liking your game. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a fear of your schedule. Like, you're like miserable, and you're like, am I going to be miserable for 2 years working late nights? So what is it for you? What's that primary driver of stress?
I think day to day, it's just pressure to keep moving. And so there's always this sort of background noise, weight on your shoulder to like keep working there's a lot of indie talks about like every day you have a touch, you know, there's like, and I hear it a lot, and I kind of adhered to that for quite a long time. It's like, you don't want to lose the habit, you just keep yourself moving and everything will be okay. So that's like a low threshold stress, but it's like endless. And then I think
you meaning it's constantly there, even when you're like sleeping.
Yeah. You just kind of, you can't help but be thinking about it all the time. Even if you're kind of like not conscious, it's just in your brain. I think like, you know, I don't have kids, but like new parents definitely feel that with their kids. That's why like, you know, parents like post their kids all the time. It's like, there's nothing else in your head. So it's, or a new dog or something. And so it just eats in your head. But I think the biggest true stress is success, and just like financially, like, you know, you go out on this huge limb, you basically have no income for me. It was like a year ish. And then the preceding year following, and you go, well, I need to succeed or I'm just going straight back. And then I'll feel like a failure because I kind of did this whole big thing. And it's like, you know, this huge studio 343 is like, bye Joe, good luck on your game. And then, you know, everybody meant well, but it's this like, yeah, good luck. And then you don't want to like go back with your tail between your legs. And you build up this fan base online too. And they are like excited and you don't want to let them down.
Before I go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
And I was just going to say too, and I think you kind of like, what is it? You sort of like, I don't think you do indie development too often without having some sense of pride or stubbornness in yourself. And so you don't want to let yourself down either, right? And I think it's like, I don't want to quit and go back before it's all over, because then it's like, I'm way too stubborn for that. I'll sink to the dirt first. But and so it's just like all these things, and they just add up, and you have to do it because you don't have a paycheck.
Well, before we move into this question, I want to say that, you know, this is your first commercial release was Song of Iron, correct?
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Okay, so. Right at the beginning of this question, I'm going to say, to launch your first game and have it go gangbusters is so rare.
Yeah.
So I would say it was a success. I would say the launch is a success. However, based on our conversation before this podcast, you feel like it wasn't. So do you want to correct me if I'm wrong, but like, do you want to like give us that the pre-launch, like when you finished up the game, you wrapped up the game, you prepared it for launch, you were collecting wish lists, everything looked like it was correct and ready to launch. And then tell me a little bit about the launch and how it went and how it felt.
Yeah, so it was, I was working at, well, I'll kind of go back a little bit because it'll give some good context to that. So I was working at 343 still when I started. I think I was probably a year in, but before I quit into the development.
Yeah.
And I had gone front page to Reddit twice with Song of Iron. I just, little gif on, you know, our gaming and like blew up 132,000 on one, 140 something thousand on the other, like monster. And so that drove a ton of wish lists to me, and that kind of gave me this confidence to move forward. So I kept going, and you know, I've watched all the indie videos, all the GDCs, all the stuff about numbers and all that. So going into launch, I had this huge sort of fan base and this sort of internal understanding that I had success coming. I had 110,000 wish lists going into launch. Whoa. And I think probably like 50,000 of that came in the last 4 months. It didn't like swell right before launch. There was kind of like a down month right before, which maybe leads to what's coming here. But monster numbers. Those numbers are pretty obscene, I think, for your average person. I mean, for your average person, they're nonsense.
Oh, dude, it's what we're aspiring for right now for Twisted Tower, yeah, it's our current
game. It's an insane number. And I still have like 80,000 wish lists, which leads you to understand where this is going. And it just didn't work. It didn't happen. I have a buddy who's also an indie solo developer, and we were looking at the numbers. We were rounding down, trying to play it cool. But we were like, this is a thing. This could sell 100,000 copies easy in a month.
You'd be set for life.
Yeah, just it could just
seriously
go. And those Reddit posts caught Xbox's attention, so I had a little partnership with them, so it was Xbox and Steam day one, and it did not sell like you would hope with those numbers. And I think now 2 years later, a little over 2 years, I'm maybe just about to be 40,000 units sold. Which is like a ton of, that's a ton, right? That's huge.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, in that moment, the day of launch, I had expectations of the moon, if you will. And I took a 2 foot jump off a wooden ramp, you know, instead. And
are you willing to disclose, you don't have to, but what does that convert to in actual USD, like net profit or net revenue?
It's a couple $100,000.
I'd
have to double check. Maybe 300K total profit from the game. Something that's a, you know, give or take 30K in that. Along the way, some of those sales were, I was on a Humble Bundle, so that kind of like makes a lot of sales for not so much money. But that was a great deal. I mean, I love being part of those deals. So those are great.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are probably thinking, oh, you made 200 grand. Why are you complaining?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, and that's, again, it is a success to a point, right? And I had every intention to keep, like, all right, I made enough. I can make part two now. I can keep going.
Yep.
And that was the plan. And the money dries up fast because you're paying for stuff. And
It sure does. And also, you paid probably a 30% tax rate on that.
Yeah, then you pay the you're paying 30% or whatever to the stores, and then you pay another 30% to the government.
and then you use it to actually live on. And and then it gets inflated. I mean, you know, because of inflation, so it's just slowly, like, everyone's like, oh, I just want to make 500K and then I'll just put the cash in my bank account and I'll just live.
If it was only so easy.
And it's like, it's just money, just it just disintegrates so quickly. And that's the way it goes. What happened? Why did it not? I really quickly wanted to give people listening some context here. Imagine you get 100,000 wish lists. What's the first thing you do? Well, I'll just say what I would do. I would pull out a calculator, and I would multiply it times the average conversion rate, and I would go, holy crap, I'm going to be a millionaire in 2 weeks.
Yep. Yeah,
exactly. Is that what happened with you?
That's effectively what we were trying to figure out. Yeah, those numbers, I mean, it's been a couple of years, but I mean, effectively, you can, the average is like, you know, 10% of your wish list you can sell in the first day or week or something. And then as you get higher and higher, the chances of it snowballing get greater and greater, theoretically. So if you can convert 10% of that in a week, the chances of that number actually like doubling or tripling for non-wish list purchases goes up really fast. To my understanding at the time. And so the expectation is, you know, you're selling 30,000 units in your first week as an indie dev, and then that just snowballs for the, you know, and then you can double that for the year. I might be really butchering this now because it's been a while, but you know, you double that for the year, and then your sales, so your wish lists get emailed every time you put it on sale over a certain amount.
Were you learning this from Chris Zakowski?
Yeah, maybe. And there was a bunch of different things, and they probably all just use the same information. You know, they're all referencing the same content.
And they're always talking about wish lists. Like wish lists are everything. And I just have this gut feeling. I don't know where it's coming from. Probably completely wrong. I have this feeling that it's all going to change.
I think it's already changed. Yeah. I think it's already changed. Like the attitude that people had before about wish lists is no longer true, I think. I mean, it wasn't true 2 years ago for me, for sure.
Yeah.
Because there's a huge... you know, I had seen some games. You can start to see games showing up on the up-and-coming list, right? And mine was taking a long time to come up. And some games that were coming out the same day, and I just knew, because there's some wish list sites, I knew they had like a third of my wish list. Nothing bad to them. Rock on to them. So I started messaging Steam. I was like, hey, where am I? Like, I know I have more wish lists than the people that are showing up. And so there were like basically the short is they told me, you know, momentum matters also. So I had gathered.
What does that mean?
I had gathered 100,000 wish lists over like 2 years. These other teams very likely gathered their much less lower number of wish lists in the last couple weeks potentially. Mm-hmm. So they had all this like momentum. Like my wish value was really low, even though I had a high number, because it's like they put like a lifespan on a wish list kind of thing or something. And so I probably really, the system probably considered me to have 20,000 or something instead of 100 and something thousand as far as they were.
Well, purely from the psychological perspective, this is, so I also, you know, do email marketing for my other sort of side hustle, which is, you know, I make games, but I also do like online courses and stuff. And when it comes to online courses and just, and you know, the primary driver of sales is emails. You know, if you have a big email list, if it's warm, so the sales term is warm, right? A warm lead. It means that somebody is, and you probably already know this, but it just means that somebody is super interested in what you have to offer. Well, the best time to sell, and this is marketing Thomas talking.
Yeah.
It sounds sleazy, but the best time to sell to a warm lead is immediately, like within like the first week, right? And then they grow cold, you know? So purely from a psychological perspective, 100,000 wish lists in 2 years, it's kind of like inflation. It's just going to slowly lose value. It's like holding cash for 3 years. It's slowly going to lose value over time. And I think the same is definitely true with a wish list. With a wish list list.
Yeah.
And that's that, dude, that's like so difficult. How did you take that?
Oh man, I did not take it very well. I mean, it was, you know, you're already putting your baby out into the wild and all that stuff. And then I had a really hard time. Launch day should be a celebration. I was curled up in a ball, you know, in a dark room for most of it. It was the worst thing launching this thing. It was the worst. It just like, you know, you're so excited. You push the green button, you know, on Steam and Xbox does it auto and all this stuff. And you just sit there and you just wait. And the first review's bad. And it doesn't suddenly sell 10,000 units, you know, in 10 minutes. And you kind of, you instantly question like, what am I doing? I had so much confidence 10 minutes ago, and now I just, yep. I feel like I just made a huge mistake, and I feel like I let my wife down. You know, you feel all these things, and you're like, you're being a little irrational maybe because you're all the stress and lack of sleep, but yeah. Oh, yeah. Man, the worst. Absolutely the worst.
Well, have you ever seen Last Kingdom?
No, I haven't, actually.
Well, I figured you would. Unless I'm forgetting the name wrong. It's one of my favorite shows, but sometimes I forget even my children's names. So, yeah, Last Kingdom. It's one of my favorites. It's about Vikings.
Oh, yeah, and, no, I've seen part of it. I haven't gone all the way through, but yeah, I think I probably watched part of it during the development.
There's this heartbeat, and I'm getting to a point here. There's this heartbeat in that show, which is it's all about destiny, mm-hmm. and there's this belief that the protagonist has. His name is Uhtred. Uhtred's belief is so strong that he is supposed to collect his father's lost kingdom and go get mm-hmm. it back.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like this destiny in his blood. It runs through his blood. And there's this feeling, it's something that happens when you're making, for me, when you're making a game and it's getting traction and people are wishlisting and it's getting views, you get into this almost like 100% confidence that destiny is finally on your side.
Yeah.
And that this is your time. This is it. This is it. And then when it's pulled out from under you on launch day, suddenly your whole identity collapses. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wait a second. That was all fake.
Yeah.
Like all that sensation of like, destiny's on my side is fake. Now, yeah, I know that that's not true, though, because your game has made money. So I know, and you should know, that you are on the right path and you need to jump in even harder for your next game.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that felt weird, like really difficult.
Yeah, it was. It definitely took a bit of adjusting. You know, it feels like you get like vertigo, right? It's like you jump out of a plane all of a sudden and like you don't know what to believe or what thing, you know, was accurate to the thing. I don't know. It's yeah. tough. And, you know, it took me some time. My wife was awesome and like kind of threw a launch party for me like a few days later. And, you know, all my friends and coworkers and stuff from.
Did you want that?
No. Yeah, I did. Like I did. Okay. It was just friends. You know, I had a lot of really good friends that were like reminding me of, you know, even if it sold zero copies, it's a success because
yeah.
Like how many people manage to do it? And it's a massive learning experience. Dude. And just to put yourself out there, all that sort of stuff. And it wasn't selling mm-hmm. zero copies. It was like doing fine.
Yeah.
And so
was it, was it, and sorry if it sounds like I'm interrupting you. There's delay with our conversation. Cause I've gotten comments in the past, like, Thomas, stop interrupting your guest. I'm like, there's a lag. It's difficult.
Oh, that's natural.
Yeah. So here's the question. Okay. Mm-hmm. The question is, how do you avoid that with Song of Iron 2?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's the greatest thing I took from it is the learnings to try to avoid it again. I mean, I think Song of Iron 2, I have to not care about how well it does first, as best yeah, as possible, you know, great, yeah, the impossible yeah. task, right? But the song struggled from a few things, and I think led to the majority of the negative reviews. My controls were not great, pretty simply mm-hmm. understood. I definitely mm-hmm. didn't like test that enough with my friends, even. And I had like, I've talked about it before, but I kind of laughed like without even realizing it. I had like started using my fingers in the most insane way on my keyboard, and I just got so used to it in development that I didn't think twice yeah. of it. I was like, my yeah. middle finger was like literally crossing over my index finger to do stuff.
Yep.
Like, it's just like insane. It's like, okay, fix the controls, which I've done a huge multiple yep. passes on now, so way better. Steam doesn't let you review until about the 20 minute mark, and so make the first 20 minutes the best 20 minutes of your game.
Yeah.
If not, like, entice people to continue playing without like stopping, because there
was it not for Song of Iron 1?
I would argue that you could get to a point of frustration before the 20 minute mark.
Wow.
Okay. Song 1. So I mean, some of my best stuff of song is in the beginning. It's sort of, it's the cleanest. You kind of have the most anticipate, like, this is the best little bit of the story. Mm-hmm. And it's fresh and stuff. But it's still like, well, it can't be that true. Because I did have, you know, I ran into that people coming right at 20 minutes and having, yep, you know, bad feelings. And then 20 minutes is the return, or 2 hours is the return window. So short game, not super good for that. So people make it, I mean, not many people finish games. I think that's pretty well known, right? Like, very few people make it to the end of a game. So say people make it 2/3 of the way through your average game, that's pretty much the end of Song of Iron, you know, so people can return it. And I had a pretty high return value too, which is less fun.
Return value, what do you mean?
What is that number? It's probably a made up term, but like a large percentage of people return the game.
They want to play a second time.
No, they, is that they, what you mean? No, they refunded it. Sorry. They refunded the purchase.
Oh, refund. Yeah. Oh, I see. I see.
The number's gone down, but it was like, for a while, it was like 20% early on. So,
is it the price?
So the price is a little high, potentially. Maybe it's the price. I think, I don't know. I don't know. I think it's probably all the reasons that people kind of didn't love the game probably led to it, and some people felt like they got a good chunk of it done in that 2 hour window, and they thought, well, I'll just return it.
So Song of Iron 2, the plan moving forward is fix the controls, fix the gameplay controls and making it less janky, because I see a review here that says it's janky. I'm not sure if that's true.
I won't argue with that. It has jankiness to it for sure.
Now let's discuss really quick though. If people are watching right now and they see me looking not at you, it's because I'm looking at the Steam page. Let's talk about the marketing of this game.
Sure.
So, I feel like the hook here.
I buried
is,
it.
Is, well, I don't think you did.
Yeah.
I think it's strong.
Okay.
So I'm sitting here going, I don't think the marketing was the issue. Clearly, like if something goes viral on Reddit, you've got something.
Yeah,
I really believe that. I've hit the front page on Reddit twice as well, and I bet you we both learned it from the same person. Did you learn it from David Whaley?
Of course I did. Who else? Come on. Yeah, I like to take credit for a third front page, because I had a buddy who was kind of going on Kickstarter, and then he had an edit. You know, to his GIF, he was all ready, and I was like, "Nope, we're redoing that. Listen, this is how it's got to go." I've learned. I think I learned the recipe.
Well, there's the reason I bring that up, Joe, is because for me, I didn't go viral on Reddit because of the game. I went viral on Reddit because of the method that I did it. So the way that I would do it. I don't do this anymore. I kind of hacked the system. So, which Reddit's kind of easy to hack sometimes. I mean, depending on which subreddit you're on, you can hack it. So what I did, I shouldn't be saying
some
this.
Some insider
what
info.
What I did is I would live stream the posting.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
So I would literally go, hey, we're going to do a live stream today, and I'm going to talk about posting to Reddit. And hey, I'm going to post this to Reddit. I never would say, go to the link and upvote. I would just say, that's what we're doing. And I would say, I hope it goes viral. And then lo and behold, people would leave the stream and go upvote it. And so if you catch that momentum on Reddit,
it's huge.
Reddit
it's
starts
everything.
Promoting it.
Yep.
It's kind of honestly, I don't think it's a very old school algorithm. Whereas YouTube, you could never do that. You could never pull that off, because YouTube's algorithm doesn't care about outside traffic. It cares about is it getting clicks from the browse page. And so, point being, all that said, long story short is Song of Iron, the GIFs did the work for you, correct?
Yeah, totally. I think on the second one, I might have posted on Twitter, like, let's see if I can do this again. But I had like 3,000 Twitter followers or something, so it didn't matter. But yeah, the momentum's everything. It kicks in and you see it happen and you go, did it. Mm-hmm. And you're like 20 minutes in, you go, got it. Got a good one.
Yep.
And you know, I mean, you don't know what kind of like how big it'll go, but it's on its way and it will do what it can do.
Yep. Can I give you like my three sort of thoughts on what you should do with Song of Iron 2?
Let's do it. Yeah.
Okay. Obviously take this with a grain of salt because, you know, Neversong made about the same. Okay. I think Neversong did $300,000 gross on Steam. Pinstripe did something like $500,000 gross. So we're like hitting kind of the same sort of level of virality. So like, what do I know? But what I would do with Song of Iron 2 is I would, and we can cut this if you want, but number one, the first thing that I would do is I would consider not calling it Song of Iron 2. Mm-hmm. I would consider calling it something completely different. Think about Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what did they wanted to do a spinoff, right? And so they did House of the Dragon.
Yeah.
So totally different name. So the reason I say that is because I'm not so sure that Song of Iron has the impact of like the reason you do a second one is because you're capitalizing on the intellectual property of the first.
Yeah.
It's the name. So the name is super viral. Sometimes studios will just buy up the name just to have it so they can create something else based on that name.
Yeah.
But it's like totally different. Like Bates Motel, it's like it's not even Psycho. It's just kind of about the characters, kind of, but it's the name that matters. So like with Song of Iron, I'm like, yes, it had 100,000 wish lists, but I don't think that you need to. If you do Song of Iron 2, essentially what you're doing is I could be completely wrong here, but you're taking the small audience from the first one and then excluding everybody else.
Right. Yeah, it's a huge risk without the massive success, right? To try to follow up.
Right.
And yeah, I totally agree that that's
it. You know, because you're saying like, if you played the first one, come on through and get the second one.
Yep.
Well, not many people played the first one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Relative to other games.
In my head, I've had this like, you know, like The Witcher in my head about it. Like how many people played one or two and three blows mm-hmm. up, right? There was also some like old school mentality of like some people who just like called their game part two and did really well because it just like makes it feel more legitimate or something. Like, oh, well, they mm-hmm. had a first mm-hmm. one. I'll play this one.
Yeah.
But there's a risk, you know, barring a giant marketing budget to tell everybody, like, don't worry, you don't need to play the first one. I'll tell you everything you need to know. That people will just go, oh, I don't know. I've never played that one.
Why don't you call it like Song of Stone or something?
Yeah, right. I could do, you know, sort of Song of Fire like you said earlier.
Yeah.
So for sure. I think there's some potential there. Or like some totally different name and then, you know, mm-hmm. subtitled like a Song of Iron game or something.
But I wonder if this is terrible advice, but you know, that's just my gut. My initial gut was like, yeah, go with a different derivative. You know?
I don't think you're wrong. Honestly, the more I think about it and have thought about it, and yeah, there's a laziness of me just going like, oh, do I have to change all this stuff for Steam? but that's it.
Oh, like, dude, I signed with 3D Realms, the creators of Wolfenstein,
and I
just messaged them today, and I said, hey, we need to change the name of the game. So we're like, awesome. They signed the game and I want to change it for the fifth time.
Awesome.
So maybe that's not good. Maybe I'm actually proving that my advice is terrible because I keep changing stuff. I don't know. But the second thing I would think about is, does Song of Iron have aliens in it?
It has a sci-fi element for sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's 2 years later and my brain, I cannot like tell the secret. No, yes, there's, you're a Viking and then there's people that come down with laser guns.
Well, I'm looking at Song of Iron 2.
It's on the trailer.
It shows it.
Yeah, I do show it.
Everything we're talking about here is marketing and it probably feels really gross to a lot of people. listening, because like, why is what, like, if a guy wants to make it Song of Iron 2, Thomas, let him make it. It's his passion, it's his baby. Yeah. And I'm just sitting here thinking, man, I want you to avoid the curl up moment.
Yeah,
for launching the second one. And so what I'm thinking is, man, don't bury the twist.
Yeah.
Give me the twist in the marketing, and you would call it Song of Neon or Song of Plasma or something. And it's like, you've got Viking of the I see the thumbnail. It's like the Viking is standing there just jacked, and he's straight up old school Viking, and then right behind him is a UFO.
Yeah.
Like that spaceship right there,
and some like space marines. Yeah. Yep. It's honestly, it's the coolest part of the story, and for the first one, I buried that deep. Your cool creative thought is like, oh, this will be the coolest twist. No one will know it's in here. I will never say a word about it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't. And I don't know if that would have like changed it too much, maybe a little bit. But I mean, it really was like this final level was this thing. You discover that, you know, that this alien race, the sort of space race, had been basically like forcing your people, the Vikings, to live on this hard planet so they would become big, strong warriors. And the harshness made them strong, kind of thing. And then they invite them to Valhalla, which is when they let them up into space to go and fight in the space wars. And so you kind of you see through the lie eventually. And then you finally walk up to these guys, and they're like half the height of the player. So the Vikings are these monsters by comparison to the people that are controlling them.
Oh, funny.
And so the final level, every hit on one of these soldiers just sends them flying, and you're like, you're just so overpowered. Super awesome concept, I think. I really enjoy it. And but I buried that. So Song 2, it's right up front. It is in the trailer. You know, Odin is like calling you to war, and then a bunch of these huge like destroyer ships come in like in space and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely more front facing this time. And it's going to be a bigger part of the game. So,
what we're doing right now is we're dancing around, we're playing with fire in a way. Because imagine, surely you've seen The Sixth Sense, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's so old. It's like 25 years old. So
people can deal with it.
I know, right? But people can deal with me spoiling this because you should have saw it 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But anyway, look, it's like the reason I say we're playing with fire is because I can imagine a studio saying, let's put the fact that they're dead in the trailer because people will come and see that because that's cool.
Yep.
Right? Let's put the fact that Bruce Willis was dead the whole time, let's put that in the trailer because that's really like really captures your attention. So I understand why what I'm saying could very well actually screw up the game itself. But the problem is that marketing is so freaking important right now because with AI tech and asset packs and just Unity and Unreal and Godot and how easy it is to learn now, dude, we're competing with so many games now.
Oh, yeah.
And so the question is like, man, you've got to, number one, you've got to have a groundswell of wish lists, and they've got to be like, you got to get those in like 6 months, like you said, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're going to go cold.
Yeah.
So you need that groundswell, and you also need to capture a ton of attention outside of the wish lists. Mm-hmm. How do you do it? Well, you've got to think really, really hard about some kind of marketing gimmick or hook that captures people's attention really fast. And a side-scrolling Viking game is, I would say, that's a cool hook, but I think I've seen something similar to it lately, other games coming out. And so now I'm like, well, you've got to find another hook to attach to it and do it hard, you know?
Yeah, and I am hoping that this, you know, now that the secret's out, like from the first game, like I have this ability to show a lot of really cool imagery of, you know, bare-chested or fur-armored warrior beating up on like literally space marines, and
I know, or lasers and stuff
and lasers. Yeah, I mean the trailer, the announcement trailer for 2 kind of has a little bit of all that stuff. Like there's lasers firing off in the dark, and I'm drop kicking these like, you know, sci-fi armored up guys, and the lasers are bouncing off your shield, and it's like a thing that isn't you don't see that very much. It's no, pretty rare imagery, and so I definitely need to lean into it for sure. And one of the things, I mean, to like, the, you know, the 6 months point, I'm some part of me, maybe it's laziness to post constantly, is like I need to save up all of my marketing like ability and put it literally into the last 6 months. The game should be done almost before I start, which is super counterintuitive to the lessons of game of indie devs over the last 10 years, right? It really is the opposite of what's been told, and I think it's a necessity now. Yeah, I think
the new approach is something like,
it's like
don't
old
post
school.
Immediately. Don't post, because I used to say start marketing your game the day you create start making it, and now I'm like, no, you kind of want to just market it like 6 months before launch,
which is more traditional
with
right?
like Steam Next Fest or something.
Yeah, I think it's there's twofold. I think people want to follow people; they don't want to follow games. So you could probably start to build an audience like showing Maya work or, you know, stuff with wireframes on of like you working on something, but don't start selling the game yet. Don't put out trailers. Don't put out cool gifts.
I agree, dude.
Show the process, but don't show anything else, I think. Or just 100%. Once in a while you can show like a little treat. But like I've been working on water because I have this boat element now. And it's like, I could totally show, oh, I got some water simulation stuff figured out. This is cool. And it's like a pill running through water. Or just like, you know, a little white box. or even the character. People have seen the character now, so it's not a big deal. But like with white background and, you know, don't show, I don't know. There's got to be some weird balance there. But I don't think we sell the game. We don't start wishlisting yet. All that stuff. We save it.
Well, and people listening are probably thinking, Thomas, you are a hypocrite. And I'm like, 100% I'm a hypocrite, because this is what I've learned in the last year.
It's new,
You know, and it's with conversations with 3D Realms as well. They're like, we need to hold tight, hang tight. Mm-hmm. Don't be putting stuff out there just yet. I'll do devlogs and stuff. I feel like that's very, it's kind of like a little bubble of safety, because they don't go super viral. And it's mainly for developers, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, you build up these audiences and you don't want your audience to go cold, right? And I think like, right. The Twitter algorithm, like all the algorithms will see you not post for like 6 months and go, well, you don't care. And then you post something and like no one sees it. It's like, because they're not going to push it. So you kind of, like anything, you kind of have to keep trickling stuff out. I've done a terrible job on that recently, which is why I know that it's a bad thing. Because every once in a while, like, hey, here's a cool thing. And then it's like crickets. It's like, that would have, you know, everything tells me from the past that should have done at least somewhat decent. And, you know, 10 people like it or something.
Well, you know, to sort of wrap up this point about just the launch of Song of Iron, I find it interesting. I'm trying to think like the audience right now. I'm trying to think like, okay, they both think that over $100,000 in sales is bad, and that probably is off-putting to people.
Yeah.
And what I wanna say is, this should encourage everybody, because what we're saying should encourage people, because what happens is you start making games and you think that's impossible to make even 10 grand. Mm-hmm. That sounds insane. But as you continue to release games, you start to realize I could probably make $1 million here with what I'm learning. And so there's this sort of Overton window that shifts slowly about what's normal and what's the proper amount of revenue to expect. Mm-hmm. And I think that, do you feel like, okay, now that I understand what went wrong with Song of Iron, do you kind of have a new, more balanced expectation for Song of Iron 2?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really, my initial plan was like, I'll do Song 1 and then Song 2, I'll try to double whatever it does, because it'll be a second one. And I think now I'd be happy with the same numbers as Song 1.
Interesting.
Emotionally, at least, I think, you know, I'd want it to do better, but I think I'm just going to go about it differently too. I probably wouldn't quit my job as early. I think I'll let the development stretch way longer and sort of part-time develop for longer, so that I'm not so worried about the success, like this banging success that I make the $1 million indie game, and then I really kind of can just make 3 more games without worrying about it too much.
Yeah.
I'm not going to look for that this time. I'm going to look for learning a bunch, putting a lot of what I learned in one and two and testing it and seeing if I'm right about what went wrong. Yeah. See if I'm right about how to correct some of that stuff. And, and just try to think of it as this middle child game, even though honestly it is so much better than the first one already. Like it is, because I didn't know what I was doing in a lot of cases, and it's so much better. Yep. And if it does the same, I think I'll be happy, because I want to make something totally different, and I've learned so much, and I'm so excited to do that, that I'm more excited to like finish and move on. And then I think any success will be good. So it's totally, shifted me, basically. Yeah.
I'm looking at the trailer here for Song of Iron 2, and then I'll shut up about what I think, my thoughts on the marketing of it. I'm looking at Song of Iron 2 here, and I'm looking at the trailer, and the beginning of the trailer, I know what you were aiming for, which is you're aiming for showing that alien ship coming in, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think these alien ships come in. I think it was Walt Disney who said, for animation, you definitely know this for sure, with animation, you go like 10 times harder than real life to try and really capture, especially for like Pixar animation, right? You go 10 times harder and exaggerate an animation to make sure the audience gets it, right? Am I wrong there?
No, yeah. Exaggeration, appeal, all these things you really push. Yeah, you push your poses.
The same is true with a trailer, in my opinion. Because like when I first saw these spaceships come in, I didn't know what they were. I didn't fully capture it. I didn't understand it. So yeah, I feel like you need to go way harder with like, no, this is a spaceship.
Yeah, yeah.
Clear as day. And not like weird clouds.
Yeah, so, that's super fair. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something I've been learning too with our game Twisted Tower.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned this from the previous trailer. We launched the trailer and it like IGN picked it up. But it only did 40,000 views.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, okay, what happened here? Why is this not at least 100,000? And I think it's because immediately in the first 3 seconds, just like you were talking about with the first 20 minutes of a, gameplay, the first 3 seconds of a trailer, it needs to immediately communicate exactly what the hook is.
Yeah.
No question. And so for me, because the game is like Walt Disney meets BioShock, I'm going to start, the first thing I'm going to show is a big giant Cinderella's castle type thing, and it's going to be cloudy and lightning's going to be flashing and there's going to be fireworks and then there's going to be blood everywhere. That's the first five seconds
there,
and
you go
got it,
what's going I've on got here
it. I know what it is. Yep. And so that's so true with every game that the audience is making right now because of the AI revolution. I don't like the AI revolution. I don't love a ton of asset packs. I don't love that thousands of games are coming out right now. But because of that, we've got to stand out so hardcore in the first, like the first 5 seconds of a trailer. You just have to do it.
Yeah, we have no choice. It's the worst, isn't it? Because it's so dumb.
I hate it.
You so badly want to build a little suspense and give people a little tease and do this and play and show this cool little like 30-second story, and you get you don't get that. Pretty rare. Yep. Like once in a while, you can get away with it, but it's luck, right? Like enough people just happen to stick around or whatever. We got to hit hard, hit fast.
Yeah, and I'm probably showing my true colors here because I've definitely become more immature as an artist. What I mean is like I'm not as pure as I used to be, and it makes me sad.
No, it's not that you're less pure. I wouldn't think of it that way. Purity of art is like a lie that you tell yourself when you're getting into it, or if you are like too pompous about it, I think. Because like, what is it? You know, it's true, and you're just being more appeal. Like you're giving more appeal to a larger audience, but that's not, you're not like selling out by doing that. I don't think at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think you're right. I think it's. How about instead of if artistic integrity was a pie. Yeah. You don't have to take three slices out and put in marketing.
Yeah.
You can just say, no, I just want another pie.
Yeah.
We're going to do a marketing pie, and then we're going to do artistic integrity pie. And sort of try and separate them out emotionally. Like, I'm going to make an artistically pure game, but for God's sake, put the first 5 seconds of the trailer should be the best part of it.
Yeah.
Don't
feel bad about showing the good stuff. You know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't feel bad about that. And, it's like... The most pure art never is like the most successful. It just isn't like it, because to be true art, like, you have to, you're going completely niche to a certain group who can understand a very specific message, and that's a risk that indie developers take often, which is why some, you know, you get really cool stuff in indie dev. But it's sort of like we're playing t-ball with against each other while these giant corps are like, yeah, whatever. And then they just, like, you know what I mean? And they're just, like, running us over in tanks instead. And it's like, you don't feel like we cannot feel bad about using tricks, quote unquote, to, like, get our messages across. We cannot feel bad about it. And so don't.
You're doing
great work. Don't worry. You know.
Okay. Well, you know, it's like the world of TikTok is where we're at.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And all the fuzzy haired Gen Zs are with their I don't know what the style is, but really big. It's beautiful. They're beautiful.
Love them.
But the TikTokers of the world have changed things.
Yeah.
Potentially for the better, maybe not. I don't know. But
it's inevitable.
Now things are. It's just cutty and fast, mm-hmm. and if it doesn't make sense in the first 3 seconds, you're done.
Yeah.
And there's part of me that's kind of like, I kind of get it, you know? It's like, we've all got so much information being thrown at us right now on our phones, then it's kind of a generous thing to quickly give the information to somebody and not waste their time. If I'm a salesman and I go to somebody's front door, it's kind of disrespectful to ask them, how you doing? How's the wife?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a cool dog. Just tell me what you want.
Even,
you know?
Yeah, the work email or you message someone, hey, it's like, just ask them the question. Don't waste the time, because I think you can earn that time. Like, you can earn the time for someone to sit and watch a 3-minute trailer. But it's like, be not, like you're saying, it's a total kindness to go, this is what the trailer is. Do you want to watch more? Keep watching. Like, give it to them in the
That's
first
right.
5 minutes. Like, if you want to keep watching, I'm gonna tell you what it is. I'll give you a little preview.
Yeah.
And
There's also go ahead, sorry.
Sorry, just like, I mean, how many TikToks, for example, you start watching and you go, oh, you're not gonna tell me the story. Like, you're not gonna you're never gonna get there. And so it's a total kindness to give them that. So
I think so too, man. Well, okay, so sort of final discussion I wanted to have here, if you have time.
Yeah, yeah, let's do it.
Do you have time?
Yeah, let's do it.
I think maybe 15 more minutes of chatting.
No,
I want to hear from start to finish. And this would be kind of maybe a cool little clip to create from this podcast. I want to hear from start to finish how you did it. How did you make Song of Iron?
Sure.
From knowing nothing about games, or you knew stuff because you were with Bungie, which is freaking incredible.
Three for three. Yeah.
I
missed the Bungie train. They're up here.
Oh, I
they're
see.
Up in Seattle. Yeah. But yeah, the Halo had been passed along already.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And now Bungie is something completely different than
Very
we remember.
Very different place. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's discuss this from start to finish of the game, because the goal, what I want from you right here, so this is very sort of focused on the audience, and I know I said we probably we're just going to have a chat. We're just going to have a chat drinking beer. But for this, I really want to hear, like, I want my audience to hear, how did he do this? Like, what's the process and how do I replicate that? So this is more of a technical conversation, and it's also a scheduling conversation of how you scheduled your time.
Yeah, yeah.
So feel free to
let it rant rip. Away. Yeah.
Oh, please.
Oh, man. It's hard to say how I got going with it without going back a bit further too. I creatively, as you know, animating has been my thing forever. And anytime on a project where I start to feel less inspired or I'm kind of being challenged anymore, I just always start doing side projects. Most of my career, that's just been like, oh, let's do an animation on the side. And over time, I started to see like design decisions being made at studios where I go, oh, I don't like that. I wonder if this would have been better. And so I started testing those concepts. So I would open Unreal and just go, see if I could like make a quick little demo to prove like, yeah, my idea was good or something, like, or at least was valid, if not good. And so that it just became this like quest to understand decisions being made. And then, I mean, everybody's got opinions making a game, and you have a studio of hundreds or a thousand people. There's going to be a lot of disagreement. And so I just kind of was like, question stuff. And then on Halo, I questioned a lot about what they were doing with Infinite. I really extremely disagreed with a lot of decisions being made.
Were you right?
I think I was right. I still think I was right. And I can't, I wish I could say more about what I was doing to prove it. But I can't, I think.
Okay.
I think it'd be safer. But basically, I tried to prove it. I built something to show what I thought was the path to be on. And mm-hmm. I got internally amazing response. And I was running playtests. And this is, you know, remember, I'm just an animator. So I'm like, I'm really sticking my nose where it doesn't belong. But I made something. I was running playtests. I was getting really good response. And I was getting shut down, basically. That turned me off very heavily, and I got some really good advice in that moment. I was very upset about that situation. I got some really good advice from an animator friend, and he said, no matter how well that would have done, if they took it, it would have been taken from you, and it wouldn't have been yours anymore, and it would have been this great thing that 343 made. Do yep. your own thing. And so I, like that day, I stopped working on this thing on the side, and I went, And I opened Unreal and I started making something, and I made a game that I would never be able to finish. And so I stopped and I thought to myself, okay, I want to go through this experience so I can learn the whole thing, start to finish, of building mm-hmm. something. And that's the birth of Song of Iron. I put down some really heavy restrictions on myself. It was like no multiplayer. Side scrolling, so I only have to worry about the one dimension, which is side scrolling. It's yep. a very common 2D indie thing because it really does make things easier to some extent.
Oh, it does. You're still dealing with the Z axis, but not so much.
Tons of stuff, and you know, you can do all this cheeky stuff where like my arrows just like lock on to zero and move, and like you know, there's all these things you can cheat a ton. And so yep. you know that I was like no to limited dialogue. Really rely on animation to drive how things run, because I can animate, so I, you know, like let the animation drive the systems a little bit. I put all these really heavy restrictions on myself to try to narrow the scope down. And you know, I was like 2 to 3 hour game, like make it a sitting or two sittings, you know, for the dads out there that just want to play a game and finish it. That was like, I had this mentality, like keep it simple, keep it small. And I just started playing around. I just put a guy in a game and started a little sillier with more physics, kind of wobbly arms and doing some cool, very like Unreal demo stuff. And I started sharing it and people were responding really well to it on like Unreal subreddit, basically. And not like crazy well. It didn't go front page then, but I was like, oh wow, that's way, like 1,000 upvotes? That's awesome. Like somebody, you know, people enjoy this, cool. So I started following that more and more. And then I burnt out like instantly. I think I burnt out maybe two or three months in. I was like, oh God, and I'm like yep. working still. And you start to see how much work is ahead of you. Cause you start to go, oh, yep. this might be real. And just like instantly, it just like melted my brain. And it took me about a month to get back into it. And I had to play this trick on myself. It was like, all right, all you have to do this week is open Unreal once a day. No obligation past that. I think the first day I opened it, I literally just probably closed it again. And then the second day I opened it and I just flew around my level that I had been making. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll move that rock. And you know, you nudge something and it just sucked me in. It just sucked me right back in because there was no pressure, right? The pressure was literally open it. I clicked the button on my desktop. Pressure's gone. I've succeeded in my task for the day.
Yep. I love that.
And it sucked. It worked. It sucked me right back in. And yep. And then I worked for 2.5 years or something. And a good part of that, I think like 18 months of it was while I was working at 343. Subreddit stuff all went crazy while I was at 343. That was a funny day. And I just kept going and I kept building it. I built the game as far as like technically how I got it done.
Yeah.
Like scheduling wise and scope and stuff. I actually built like a miniature of the game in Unreal. Like you would walk for like 2 seconds and you'd be to the next level. Like it was literally like a goofy little shoebox version of the game. And it really gave me this super fast scope concept of like where the levels are, what's the flow, because it's a linear side scroller, so it goes from all the way from this side all the way to that side and you're done. And so I just built this miniature and it let me like ideate and just kind of like understand where I was going, and it gave me this roadmap of things to make. And then I pretty much did a really rough, like crazy rough white box of the whole game, so I could technically run from one side to the other successfully, even though like it'd be like strips of just flat white ground for a long time. And that gave me this like rough timing, and then I just started building in pieces, and I completely went for this layered approach where I brought like the whole game up to this, and then I brought the whole game a little bit higher, and then I brought the whole game a little higher. I don't think that was the best decision, but at the time it felt good.
Why was that not the best decision?
I think it was burning me out in a way that was making like the last couple things I did of that layer mm-hmm. way worse, because I was getting lazy, because I was like, I just mm-hmm. can't wait to move on to the trees, you know, or whatever I was going to do next. I was like
a new biome.
Yeah, I was like getting excited about this next thing, and I'm just like, I'm still white boxing, and I've been white boxing for like a month.
I see.
I think there's some mix. I think going the full other direction isn't the best way either. Like, you don't want to build an entire level to finish and then start the next one and go, oh, I built everything wrong because now I can't build this other idea. So yeah, there's some mix. And Song 2, I've built that shoebox version again. It's a little bit bigger and it's got more info in it for me, but it's allowed me then to go, okay, I feel confident in the core like systems that the game needs, which I didn't mm-hmm. have in the first one. So I'm building them all in the first level. The first level is like, it's going to get to like 80% and then I'm going to move on.
Yep. Yep.
And the order of levels I'm building differently now. It's like, I'm trying to build the first level at the perfect time where I am the most excited and I have the most skills and the most systems built. So the first level is the best.
Dude, that's brilliant. And that is so smart.
It's just, yeah. And then like I'm the second level, I'm giving like the middle, and then the end I want to do cool, but it's like I just got to do it the least amount of people will get there. It's still going to be cool. Nothing, you don't want anything to be bad, but you know art is hard, and you will be inspired or you won't be inspired, and you will see the work quality just go up or down to the ground. Mm-hmm. Right. So I did not do that for Song 1. So I got lazy in certain parts. I tried to recover. I was able to like come back to them and like polish them up. But still, it's like you can kind of see it sometimes. At least I can, because I know, I guess, where where those moments happen. Maybe the whole thing looks like that to people. Yeah. But yeah. And
so how did you do it alone though? That's what I'm most curious about.
Sure.
Like, did you use assets? I saw you posted on Twitter, and your post made me angry. It was you, and you said, "This is my first time doing Blender." Was that you?
Oh yeah, fairly recently, the Voldemort,
and it was
sculpt.
Gorgeous. Yeah, it was gorgeous. I was like, this guy, this is the first time he's ever.
That was my first sculpt too. Yeah. No. Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, Blender is a tool, and I want to learn it, and so I was trying to like get myself to learning it with sculpting, which I haven't done. I use some packs. I'm not going to lie. I took models. I think every asset I touched somewhat. I don't think there's any just like straight out of a pack into here. And tons of stuff I like started as a pack asset. Like, I need to know how to do trees, and I have no clue. So I like got an asset that I liked and used that to initially populate. And then I was like, oh, I want it to be better. And so you start working on it, and it's, what's the boat thing? It's like, if you take every piece of the, if you slowly replace every piece of the boat, is it still the same boat when every piece has been replaced? I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe not for like something like this, but so yeah.
I think it's just the way we make games now.
It's just the way
you make games.
Yeah, I mean, I was laughing. I was playing Baldur's Gate, and I was like, oh, I have that tree in my game. You know, it's like even they are not innocent of it. And yeah, but it's like, you know, you make art out of it, and you adjust it, and tons of stuff I made fresh characters, all the character armor, all the characters and stuff I made.
No way, dude.
Yeah.
Was that Blender? Like
that was 3D Studio Max.
Okay, so you wanted to learn Blender.
Blender was a part two, was where I started to try to get into it. Because I want to do more sculpt stuff, and I didn't, not having sculpt, it's really hard. It was hard for me to like get good normal map stuff going.
So it was well with organic stuff as well, right? Yeah. Like trees and humanoids and all that.
Yeah. I was using Unreal's like texture thing. I'm forgetting what it was. The Substance, their version of Substance Painter, basically.
Okay.
To try to get some of that stuff, but it becomes very generic and non-specific in a way that I wasn't good at it, I guess. But so yeah, I mean, I the only help I had on song was music and audio. I did end up hiring someone to help me with some Foley because I basically didn't. I know myself, and that is something I am terrible at audio. I don't understand it. It's just something that like doesn't work my brain, and music tenfold that I was never going to be able to write good stuff, and it felt like it deserved some really good Viking stuff. And Will Goss, who did it, I think he smashed it. I mean, he really nailed it. And so that was my little bit of help that I had in the project. But I just kept making stuff and animating and just building piece at a time, and which sounds like a nothing answer, but it's just sort of what you just have to keep going, and you can't rely on inspiration to drive, like to be fuel. Inspiration is like a great one day, you work 3 extra hours or something because you get hyped up, but you have to be stubborn, I think, a little bit. Like you just have to know that it's just going to take time, and you have to work at it. Doing marketing at the same time, and you get to the part where you have to port it, and that gets insane. So I ported myself to Xbox, which was a nightmare. And I had FMod, which really made it hard for me. Something about FMod I've cursed FMod so many times.
That was one of the first questions.
Room. Was it? Yeah.
One of the first questions that 3D Realms asked me.
Are you using FMod? Because
they're handling the port for Xbox and Play. I told them, I said, look, if we work together, I will not touch console.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they said, okay, well, we'll do the port. Are you using FMod? Which we're not.
It has been fully stripped from Song 2. And I'm happier for it every day. It makes me a better person.
I've been told so many times to use it by like friends and people on YouTube and stuff. And I'm like, I'm sure it's amazing.
I don't doubt it's a powerful tool. Absolute nightmare for someone who doesn't understand it. Absolute nightmare. Yep. Yeah. But I,
go ahead.
And then I started putting a date on it, and that gave me some fun pressure to hit a date. And the date moved a little bit, but I just started wrapping it up. And I had a really good buddy, I kind of mentioned him earlier, who kind of he was developing his own game at the same time, and so we were coworkers, and we really encouraged each other, and he played song a lot, and we talked design and pushed it, and there's like 3 months where you kind of black out in the middle there. And something else as far as how you get it done. I kind of thought of the game being made by three versions of myself, which sounds a little insane maybe, but I think I was probably a little insane in making it. And it was like the person who designed the game, he worked on it for the first year. Then there was like the person who just built all the stuff for that person, and they worked on it for like the next year, and then there's the insane person who launched it last 3 months. And I really, in the last 3 or 4 months, I had to trust the first two people over myself. Like I just had to believe that they had made a good game, because I couldn't see it anymore. I absolutely could not tell. I was over. I couldn't do it. I couldn't see the screen, you know? And so I kind of like was pretending. I was like, I'm trusting designer Joe that he made a good call here, and I just got to keep building his stuff. And that mentality.
That's a great way to put it, dude.
I think that saved me because there would have been times where I would have just not launched or something. Like I got kind of freaked and I thought I had a terrible thing, and you know, arguable, but
no, it's not arguable. Dude, this is your first commercial release.
Yeah, and no, it's good.
To make over $100,000. Dude, that's awesome.
I'm very proud of it. I really am. Yeah.
You should be. It looks incredible.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, you know, I think that I think that wraps it up, Joe. I think that was a really, like, I learned so much from that conversation. And I appreciate your honesty. Links are below, for those of you listening, links are below for Song of Iron, and then also Wishlist Song of Iron 2. Do we want Wishlist for Song of Iron 2? Listen,
yeah, you know, if you want to, do it, but watch the trailer and let me know what you think. Follow me on Twitter or something if you want. Sweet. Or something. I don't post a lot, so I won't spam you, I promise.
Yeah, stay, for those of you who are wishlisting Song of Iron 2, make sure you stay excited about it.
Yeah, hit the...
And stay nice and warm so that when it launches, we can convert.
Yeah, well, there's a bell now too, right? So you get extra notified on stuff. Yeah, ring through that thing. No, it's all good.
Cool, Joe. Thanks for your time, man. That was awesome.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks. Thank you for having me. I love talking about this stuff, and the more in-depth we get, the more fun I have. So,
yeah, we can do it again for sure.
Yeah, love it.
All right. Cheers, man.
See ya.
Get over here. Get down.
Hey, thanks for watching. By the way, if you haven't downloaded that free 2D game kit below, click below. It's my treat to you. I used this game kit to make a game for PewDiePie in 14 days. And I actually got to play it with him in front of his audience, which is really cool. This game kit is totally free. It's my treat to you, and you can use it however you want. You can make a commercial game and make $1 million off this game kit. I don't care. Or you could just use it for a hobby project. It's my treat to you. And by the way, if you haven't clicked like, that would mean a ton to me. Hit subscribe. And also, this is important, hit that notification bell. Here's why. If you get notified of when I'm live, you can watch me make my next game and let me know in the chat what you think about the game or any ideas you have, and you might just show up, your chat might just show up in the next video that I upload. All right, I'll talk to you later. Bye. I love you too.